freedom of speech lives here. It's The Morning Answer with Jen and Grant.
Thanks for joining us. And as the gentleman says, it is Friday. We've been working for the weekend, and wow, here we are. I'm Jennifer Horn.
Grant Stinchfield.
It's been a long week, you know.
Oh boy, trampling yourself. That's when you know it's been a long week.
It's all the voices that are in my head. I just have to silence them.
Oh boy, she's got voices in her head now. This is great.
Yesterday, at this very moment, Grant, we broke some news. Well, the people, our friend, Jennifer Van Laar over at Red State, broke some news the evening before about the Los Angeles County Health Director, Barbara Ferrer. And there was a story that she used a report that she helped create, or at least her daughter did, along with a couple of others in L.A. County, that was used by the CDC and by other states as a reason to mask children. Well, the director of public health, Barbara Ferrer, is speaking out against those reports, slamming speculations of not publicly disclosing a conflict of interest after a report revealed that this CDC-backed study on school mask mandates was co-authored by her daughter. Yesterday, Barbara Ferrer responding.
I had nothing to do with that study. I didn't review that study. I actually didn't see that study until recently. The people who complete conflict of interest forms are the people who worked on the study who completed those conflict of interest forms. I have no family relatives that work at the Department of Public Health. I don't supervise any family relatives who do any work that relates to work at the Department of Public Health.
Wait a second. First off, she sounds like Joe Biden and having no knowledge of Hunter's business deals.
Never heard of him. So, my daughter, Caitlin Barnes, who? What?
My daughter, Caitlin Barnes, she worked on what kind of study? she worked on a big study about masks.
Is that where she went?
Come on. Like, nobody believes that. And does she not work for the health department, or does she just work for the county?
She works under the umbrella of the Board of Education.
Okay.
I mean, she still works for the county. And look, you can say there was no conflict. My daughter works for the county. That's not uncommon. You could say a lot of things. She seems a bit frazzled, I think, by these allegations. Here's a little more.
I have no interest or ability to control any of my family members' work, since they don't work for me or at this department at all. So I'm not. There's no conflict of interest here. At all. I think I'm not really sure what you're referring to, since I had nothing to do with the study. We can go to the second question. You have our statement. I didn't work on this study. There's no conflict of interest. I didn't direct any work, and I have no family members that work at the Department of Public Health and are supervised or supported by me.
There you go.
Jen, how about this, right? So clearly, there's all kinds of perceptual problems here, whether there's a problem or not. You know, I don't know. In fact, I even kind of defend it. All right, you got a daughter who works someplace else, whatever, right? Like, they were running these policies anyway. You know, she ought to just double down on it. She should have said, you know what? My daughter worked on a tremendous study. Can you tell me what Los Angeles did any differently than our sister city in New York or our sister city in San Francisco?
They don't know how to communicate,
Did we do anything differently? Do you think this would have changed my mind? We were doing the best we could, and we used this study, which seems to be like a good study to me.
I mean, do you have evidence to prove this isn't a good study?
Right.
I mean, there's just so many things. And the funny thing is that I think because Barbara Ferrer is definitely public and she's taken criticism because she, like everyone else that has this power to control people's lives, you know, she's been caught without the mask, even though she's a big fan of the masking mandate. She accepted an award where she mentioned her daughter that works for the county, by the way, thanking her for getting her through the pandemic without a mask on. She was at the All-Star game just a couple of days ago without a mask on, even though we're in high transmission right now. So, you know, she's under criticism a lot. She's the one that's the face of this. But really, the crux of the story is that the daughter, that Caitlin Barnes, who was writing these studies, which, by the way, it's part of the, gosh, see, this is what I'm telling you, my brain is Swiss cheese.
What happened? Listen to me. Just take a breath. And then, do you want me to help you?
I'm just thinking, I'm trying to find my word, Grant. Okay. What is the word where it's something that, like, tradition, except when you're talking about, like, business matters?
Like, tradition? I don't know.
Like a process. Anyway, let's just use tradition.
This is me helping you.
Look, it's been a tough week. I lost a family member. Mom's sick. You know, it's the whole thing, okay?
I know.
I'm on the crux of vacation. I promise I'm going to come back to you guys very fresh, and I'll remember all my words. But
do you want to take some time and go cry?
I don't need to cry. I just need to get my brain spinning. Right. I need to get the hamster shocked on that wheel so it can start spinning again. I keep
tradition?
Telling you.
Is that what you said? No, not tradition.
That's what I said. But okay, so it is, it's standard. It's standard operating.
Standard procedure.
It's
standard procedure.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. Whew, that was rough. Guys.
Yeah. It's okay. This never happens to you.
Anyone that's just tuning in right now, they're like,
this does not normally happen to Jen.
It's standard procedures that when you're writing these types of studies that you have a disclosure form where you do disclose any conflict of interest. And the article that was written by Jennifer Van Laar actually suggests the conflict of interest came from Caitlin Barnes, not necessarily Barbara Ferrer. Certainly we can say, hey, Barbara Ferrer had a friendly writing a study. She used, as you mentioned yesterday, junk science to justify her masking orders. So did the CDC, by the way. So did the rest of the country. But it was on the daughter. The onus was on her to fill out these disclosure forms. And it seems, at least by Jennifer Van Laar's reporting, that she did not.
It's interesting because Barbara Ferrer, who's the director of health in L.A. County, and so just to review the story, and her daughter wrote a study that was apparently used by Barbara Ferrer to justify the muzzling of our children throughout L.A. County. So when she was talking, she said they signed conflict of interest. She said everybody involved in the study signed it. That's what she said. But apparently the reporter says that she didn't sign it.
Van Laar
says
she did, but didn't disclose her relationship to her mother.
You know, like I said yesterday, I don't really even know if there's a conflict of interest. I mean, Barbara Ferrer should have just said, what's the problem? She works for the county. She doesn't work for me. The CDC used this study. Are you telling me I shouldn't use the study just because my daughter wrote it? I mean,
the other thing that's a little suspect is the fact that a project manager working for the county is writing a study that the CDC and Barbara Ferrer and everyone else controlling municipalities are using, right?
Maybe that's the real story.
I mean, that to me is what really stinks about the whole thing. And that's why it makes me think something nefarious is going on. And this is just a bunch of bureaucrats that are trying to provide evidence so they can pat themselves on the backs about the job that they've done.
Let's put Barbara Ferrer's daughter on this study. You know what? She's always wanted to do some science studies.
Yeah.
So maybe we
and
could put her on.
She's in communication. So why? I mean, look, nobody's coming to you, Grant. Nobody's coming to me to do an article for JAMA.
Oh, I'll do an article for JAMA.
I bet you will. But nobody's asked us is the point. Nobody has asked us to do that because we're not qualified. Was Caitlin Barnes qualified to do this study? I think that's a question. And in talking to Jennifer Van Laar yesterday for a brief second, Grant, she indicated that as much as Barbara Ferrer is saying that there was no problem, and the county people within the inner circle said it was widely known that Caitlin Barnes was Barbara Ferrer's daughter, you know who didn't know?
Who?
Catherine Barger, who is on the board of supervisors, who has Barbara Ferrer making all of these decisions for the city or the county, excuse me, of Los Angeles. And she didn't know that the daughter wrote this study that they all used to mask kids in school. You'd think that'd be a big piece of information for the Board of Supervisors to get.
But would it?
I don't know. I think there's something here. 855-785-8255. You can chime in on that, 6 o'clock club members.
I really just think the story is we really should look at the study and see how bad it is. And even the CDC, in one breath, they use it publicly in a news conference. In another breath, on the CDC website, they call out all the problems with the study.
Another big issue that the CDC, the head of the CDC, Rochelle Walensky, talking about, you know, how great this study is. And then, as you did yesterday, did a quick search of the website and found three big asterisks about why this study shouldn't be used widely.
I think everybody just needs to realize what the real story is here is it's now coming out that everybody was in cahoots with each other to get your kids muzzled, get us muzzled, to put the masks on, and everything was bogus. Everything that has come out about this virus seems to me to have been bogus.
As we continue, the January 6th committee meeting last night. But what really happened at the Capitol? The Epoch Times doing a tell-all piece. It's a bombshell. We'll hear about it as your Friday Morning Answer continues.
Heard on radios, smartphones, and home speakers everywhere. This is the Morning Answer with Jen and Grant.
Thanks for joining us. It's your Friday edition of The Morning Answer. I'm Jennifer Horn.
And I'm Grant Stinchfield.
And imagine this, Stinch.
Yeah.
you get up in the morning, you know, you're shaking that sleepy dust off, kind of having that cup of coffee, and maybe you're going to go to breakfast, maybe you're going to go to the gym. You walk out to your yard, you get into your car, and you realize, wait a minute, I'm not alone in here. There's strangers inside, and those strangers, well, they seem to be doing drugs in my car.
We need a doctor, please. A doctor, please.
What would you
cops
do?
Is what you need.
You need cops. Exactly right. Well, that's what happened when cell phone video captured a car owner confronting two people in Beverly Grove, by the way. This is no slummy area. And the neighbor witnessed this guy going out and confronting these two doing drugs in his car. He took videos of the scene.
I watched this on Instagram.
Yeah. And what
he pulls up next to it. He's in his other car and he realizes somebody's in his car. Now, I will tell you, he did what nobody should ever do. The man could have gotten himself killed.
Well, that was the neighbor, actually. I guess they thought the people were stealing the car, but they were just there smoking crack. So the neighbor showed up, and he's the one that chased them off. You're right. It is probably not the smartest thing to do.
Oh, he had his head down. The guy's getting out. He's, like, fooling with his phone. His head is buried in his phone as you've got two drug users in your car that are now going to feel like cornered animals because you've pulled up next to their car. You've basically blocked them in, even though it's a stolen car, or at least they're stealing the seats of the car, right, to do their drugs in there. Then you get out and you confront them. You do not know what these people are capable of. You're outnumbered 2-1. Dude, call the cops and back off.
Yeah, especially.
I mean that. Like, you do not need to be a hero. It is not worth losing your life over for two people doing drugs in your car.
Exactly, because your life is not at risk at that moment. Apparently, they believe that these two were in their 40s. They were homeless, believed to be homeless, found their way into a car. They said the question from law enforcement was whether or not this car was locked. They said that it was, but somehow these two managed to get inside.
You know,
and started doing their drugs.
Can I say pisses me off? Are you allowed to say that?
Well, you just did, so I think,
okay.
You know,
I don't know.
Let's just go with it.
So I've been doing radio a long time. I've never actually been confronted with that question. I don't know. Here's what ticks me off. How dare you, LAPD, where the car's locked?
Is the car?
What the hell does it matter whether the car's locked or not? I got two people who don't belong in my car. They're in my car. It's my car.
Smoking crack in my car.
If I want to leave it unlocked, I can leave it unlocked. And by the way, I probably leave it unlocked. Because I don't want them breaking the window to get in the car.
And that's what a lot of people are doing. They don't want to lock up their car so that they don't lose the back windshield or one of the windows. And,
you know,
the real surprise was when they found out it was Hunter Biden. I mean, that was the real terrifying thing.
Right, that was the real Hunter Biden and his...
That's fake news.
Yeah, no, that is fake news. But look, how dare the police try to blame this on the victim?
I know.
That's what they're doing. Oh,
was
did
it
you
locked?
Have the car locked? Well,
you
sorry,
asking for
pal,
this?
You're... Yeah, look, I love cops, but this sounds like some communications idiot who's probably not a badge holder.
Gotta lock up
your cars. Run communications in the office.
This story, pretty scary. Four people shot in downtown Los Angeles last night. Police are looking for two suspects. This according to the LAPD. It happened about 9:35 when a group of people standing in front of a CVS at 7th and Spring were targeted by two black men. According to officers, the shooters initially reported to be four or five men, but later as two black men who fled on foot. Police added that
that's a pet peeve of mine, by the way.
Because they ran away on foot?
Fled on foot.
Well, sometimes you might have,
back to journalism school. Early, you can't say fled on foot because no one would say that. Nobody would say fled on foot.
On
you sound
foot.
Like, what's the anchor man? They cling to life. Two men in Los Angeles cling to life tonight after they fled on foot from the robbers. It's San Diego News in 1977.
I'm just thinking of, there's a comedian. Is it Cat Williams is the comedian's name? Yeah. He's very funny and a little raw, but he did this bit about, do you remember Oscar Pistorius, the guy that had no legs?
Yeah.
That killed his... girlfriend or wife, remember that?
Yeah.
And he was like a world-class runner.
I knew a guy with one leg and they called him Eileen.
Anyway, Cat Williams had a joke that said when Oscar Pistorius would run, you'd hear cling, 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 cling.
That's horrible. You thought my joke was
he
bad.
Would not flee on foot is what I'm getting.
Got it.
All right. So we don't know what led to the shooting, but we do know that gun violence is up. And I don't want to use the word gun violence, just violence in general. Shootings are up. Gang violence up. I mean, it's just it's ridiculous. There was a story yesterday at Santee Alley where there were all of these fights breaking out again. People are upset. there is no law and order. They know they can get away with things, and that's exactly what they're trying to do.
Do you know, well, in L.A., it's probably been decades, but there was a time where we would never consider making jokes about four people being shot in downtown
And by the way,
LA.
That's not what my joke was about.
No,
it was
I know.
About
I,
the wording.
I know it's not. But we would never even consider
awful.
Surrounding the story with jokes.
But it's just every day. And that's the, that's what's awful about this, is that it's literally every single day. It's ironic. It doesn't even make you laugh. It's ironic that every morning when you turn on the local news websites, it's person shot, drive-by shooting, police officer involved, you know, name it.
What is it? What is it?
What?
What is it?
I said, what do you mean?
It's ironic.
The irony that you sit down every day and nothing changes, right?
You think? Do you think?
Okay, Alanis. My example is this. You ready for it?
Yes.
You look at Channel 5 right now, four shot in downtown L.A. Monkeypox could become entrenched in the U.S.
Oh, gosh. They're still they're clinging to monkeypox.
Person eludes police after standoff. Man accused of assaulting women in park bathroom. I mean, it's just, it goes on and on and on, and it just doesn't change.
Though I think, was it Dr. Corco who came on and said, breaking news to report today? Two men go to lunch in downtown L.A., get back in their cars and go home. Nothing happened.
And that was Larry Elder.
Oh, that was Larry Elder.
He'll be with us later today. Now, lawmakers in California, they want to look like they are doing something. So they're going to try to crack down on catalytic converter thefts, which also is plaguing all of California. Crooks go into your yard. They take out the catalytic converter and they can take off. In a matter of moments, they sell that for precious metals because they're very good for people's investment portfolios. They sell it on the black market. They sell it to a recycler who can strip it down for metal. So what they're trying...
The folks over at Midas Gold are not involved in this trade.
No, they're not.
By the way.
Absolutely
so don't
not.
Call Midas Gold for the...
No.
For that stuff.
Assemblyman Jim Patterson, though, says that catalytic converter theft shot up 900%. In Fresno County from 2020 to 2021. And so he introduced Assembly Bill 1653, allowing for the CHP task force to assist with catalytic converter theft investigations. The CHP getting called on a lot for these drug crimes and other things. And now we're looking at catalytic converter theft as well to get a task force involved to track that down.
You need a law to get the CHP involved?
I guess to give it as part of their purview of their tasks, sure.
God, you think if a law is broken and you want the help of the state police, you could just call them.
You think you could. But it is California, and we do have a lot of laws. Plus, the legislature has to look busy. You understand, right?
Yes.
They're constantly
How many laws
spinning.
Was it that Gavin Newsom signed?
Wasn't it 700 last October or November? Mm-hmm. All right. As we continue, well, it seems that there is good news for House Republicans. We'll tell you about a brand-new poll dealing with the midterm elections as your Friday Morning Answer continues.
We're listening to you on our brand new Jen and Grant 24-hour comment line. Call 877-590-5843.
The only good face tattoo ever was when Indiana Jones, the very first one, Harrison Ford's teaching the class, and one of the pupils looks at him and shuts her eyes, and it says, I love you. That's a good face tattoo.
This is the Morning Answer.
Thanks for joining us. Finally, a Friday here on The Morning Answer. I'm Jennifer Horn.
And I'm Grant Stinchfield.
And it seems that Republicans feel a little optimistic, at least in the House of Representatives. Kevin McCarthy might be crowing a bit, of course. So we have a long way to get to November. You know, you've run for office, Grant, that it's still early for sure. But there is a new poll of the 56 most competitive battleground House districts, and they find that Republicans hold a 4-point advantage, which is 46% to 42% on a generic congressional ballot. That's higher than it has been. It's been hovering around 3. Several recent polls have showed a few gains by Democrats, but the reality is that the political environment right now still remains favorable to Republicans.
No surprise, I don't think, right? I mean, I think anybody with common sense would look at the landscape of politics today and say, you know what, how can Democrats find themselves in a winning position come the midterms? The country's a mess. The economy's a mess. Our enemies are on the run. The world is a mess. We are not leading. America's acting from behind. So, of course, you would think people with common sense would say we're going to vote Republican. So I'm hopeful about the poll, but you know me, I never believe any of these polls.
Yeah, well, and the thing is you kind of have to, you look at everything, right? But you still realize that that each day is something new and unique. Historically, the party that's in charge does not do well when the midterms come around. They take a loss. Traditionally, when a president like Joe Biden has an approval rating around, what, 35, 37%, some polls have him at 30%, that means he's probably going to take a shellacking. The biggest congressional loss actually happened to President Obama, even though his approval rating was a little higher than you've seen historically from Trump or from Joe Biden, which to me indicates that people didn't like Obama's policies, but it made them feel good to say that they liked him, right? And so he took a huge shellacking in the House with an even higher approval rating than Joe Biden has right now. You also have to look at demographic groups. And certainly Democrats are starting to sweat because they've been losing support from Latino voters. We've been talking about this, Grant. When people ask me what I think is going to save California, I say Latino voters are the people that we need to save California. And this new poll that we're talking about here says that Democrats only have a 5-point lead amongst Hispanics over 50. That's a huge decline. You're talking about a double-digit lead that Democrats used to have with this group. And now Asian Americans seem to be coming along. Democrats only have a 3% lead over Republicans when it comes to Asian American voters as well. Another demographic group to watch, maybe shifting gears, shifting sides. So,
and what you need to remember is that we don't need to win those demographics.
Mm-hmm.
We only need to decrease the margin from where the Democrats had them. And if you decrease the margin by a large portion, you overwhelmingly put Republicans over the top. It always amazed me that so many of the Asian population voted Democrat, which was bizarre to me. But then, you know, you look at like the Vietnamese, overwhelmingly Trump supporters.
It really is interesting how different there are different pockets and breakdowns within that big umbrella. But certainly, I think people who have immigrated to this country typically tend to vote Democrat, at least for a little while. Here is a pretty stunning number, however. The vast majority of Hispanics unhappy with President Biden overall, forget any age group, but overall, he only has 19% approval with Hispanic voters.
Only 19%. So that's
stunning. That's a really, really low number. Only 19% of Hispanics approve of Biden's conduct as president. 70% disapprove. This is a Quinnipiac poll as well, your alma mater, that was released on Wednesday of this week. Of Hispanics who disapprove, 49% feel strongly about it, while 20% are somewhat discontented.
Who's not strongly discontented? I mean,
20%.
How are you not? Like, at least an honest person could say, you know what? I voted for this guy. It's not working out well. Look at the country right now. Just look at gas prices, what he's done. They're now on the verge of declaring some kind of a climate emergency.
Which would mean more spending.
More spending would give control over Lord knows what to the federal government. He can literally, unilaterally take control of so many things if he does this. This is what we warned you about when it comes to the Democrats and their oppressive policies and their dictatorial style.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see all of this polling that has started to come out. And there are multiple polls. It's not just one outlier. But in some new information that's coming from AARP, they also do their own polling. You know, ARP. And the polling group Fabrizio Anzalone, your people, I think that's very Italian. 56 most competitive House districts. Republicans are up 4 on the generic ballot. Democrats just have a 5% lead, as we mentioned, with Hispanics, a 3-point lead with Asian Americans. As far as the approval rating goes for the two candidates today, Biden's approval rating is at 37%. President Trump's approval rating today, even with the January 6th hearing, is at 50%.
So that's about as good as it gets for an American president in the climate.
How can you get more than 50% in today's climate where everybody's so divided?
You can't.
But that's incredible. Think about everything that's been thrown at Donald Trump. Think about, you know, everybody that calls this very program and says his personality, it's baggage, it's all of this. 50% approval rating, 49% disapproval rating compared to Biden, 37% and 61% disapproval.
Do you know what's changed is the perception of what's important.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when President Trump was in office, things were going pretty well. Of course, we had the China virus, which screwed everything up. But it was going pretty well. What was perceived to be important was for a president not to tweet meanly at people.
Mm-hmm.
It was not to be abusive.
First world problems,
people.
Right? Yeah. Everything was going great. We just didn't like the
tweets. Someone criticized you. They didn't want him lashing out at people. That's what seemed to be important. Now people realize, you know what's really important? Policy. That the mean tweets, that this, that, the other thing, that's not the most important thing out there.
Yeah, it's not. And now that the economy, and by the way, this polling indicates that the economy is the top issue. And, you know, how many times have we heard it's the economy, stupid? And it really is. People can't afford to operate in their lives, and they have to start making choices and cutting back. You can throw all the social issues at the wall that you want. Is something going to stick if people are making decisions about whether or not they can afford the same groceries they were buying 2 years ago under President Trump? And so when people are asked, when voters were asked about the economy and who's better suited to handle it, most voters across the board, Democrats and Republicans, say that Republicans are the ones who are best equipped to deal with economic concerns, crime, and immigration. Now, Democrats, they hold the advantage on abortion, health care, and Social Security. What do you think is most important and top of mind for voters? It's the economy and crime. It just has to be.
It has to be. I mean, you know, I always say all politics are selfish politics. Whatever affects you the most is going to be top of your list.
Yeah.
So the economy affects us all. So that's why we say, you know, just focus on the economy. We'll do okay because we've got to turn that around. Crime, you know, a lot of us, we see the crime every day, but we don't experience the crime every day.
But we feel it. Respects, I think here in California, we're feeling it.
In L.A. because, you know, now people that just live just a little bit outside of the city say, you know what, I can't bring this purse, or I can't wear this, or I'm not going to drive this car down there. Like, you know, that is affecting people's lives.
And Van Jones actually spoke to this. He said that black voters are also frustrated with Joe Biden.
For African-American voters in particular, there's a special heartbreak because, first of all, the pain is more intense. You know, the rising gas prices, food prices, it's really walloped the black community in a particular way. But the hopes were so much higher. And so you have a community that came out in huge numbers in 2018, huge numbers in 2020, expecting things to get a lot better. And instead, economically, at least, it didn't come true.
That's Van Jones on CNN. As we continue, Joe Hanneman will be with us from the Epoch Times. They've got a brand new documentary out today about what really happened on January 6th. You won't want to miss this. As your Friday Morning Answer continues.
Dropping truth bombs on the left. This is the Morning Answer with Jen and Grant.
Thanks for joining us on your Friday Morning Answer. I'm Jennifer Horn.
And I'm Grant Stinchfield.
And a lot of attention has been given to the January 6th committee. They claim they are trying to get to the bottom of what happened on the day that protesters marched into the Capitol. But I think anybody who is looking for a fair description of what happened, well, you're not finding it with the January 6th committee. And thankfully, sources like the Epoch Times are taking a look and asking questions about what really happened on that day, on January 6th.
The way they're going after people is absolutely insane. They're out for blood, and they're getting it. They appear to be winning. Nothing about this is normal.
Now I describe it as an inside job.
There is a new documentary that is premiering at theepictimes.com, the real story of January 6th. And one of their great investigative reporters at the Epoch Times is Joe Hanneman. You can follow him at Epic Joe. That's EPOCHJOE64 on Twitter. And check out the Epoch Times on Twitter as well. Joe, thanks for being with us and good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, absolutely, because Grant and I have been talking till we're blue in the face about this January 6th committee not having any questions to Nancy Pelosi about why there was no National Guard, not having any questions as to why some people were welcomed in to the Capitol. What happened to Ashley Babbitt? Why is the left trying to pretend that police officers were killed during the riot? And is this just an attempt to take down Donald Trump? I mean, these questions are not being asked, Joe, and I think it's really important that you guys are doing this piece. What were you most shocked to learn about the January 6th and the events that day?
Well, I mean, the documentary grew out of our reporting throughout the late winter and into the spring. You know, a lot of the information that we were coming across is not something that you're finding in any kind of mainstream media coverage of this. For instance, the use of the police force and excessive force used that day, the heavy use of munitions in a crowd that was, from all indications, was largely peaceful. And, you know, the police from a terrace above this crowd just started lobbing grenades, concussion grenades, flashbangs, rubber bullets, other things down into the crowd. And, of course, once they got over being shocked that they were being targeted by these munitions, it stirred up a tremendous amount of anger. And the footage you see in the documentary of this is quite jarring, including a gentleman who was briefly anyway was set on fire by one of these munitions that they were blowing up at head level when they're used to be much more below the waist. And some of them have projectiles in them, and they're supposed to set people to flight when they're trying to disperse a crowd. But these were just being indiscriminately lobbed into this large crowd on the west side of the Capitol, and that really started the pot to boiling that day. And that's something you don't hear about and you don't see much about. And I think people will be very surprised when they see the video of some of this stuff.
So I think I've just started watching it. So I want everyone to know on the Epic Times, you can watch this video now. It's out, just uploaded today. I think I saw some of the parts where you talk about what you're speaking of, the incompetence of law enforcement there that day. Does this documentary get into it all? The possibility, as we heard from the one clip from that young lady saying this was an inside job. I have studied this for now the last year and a half. There were signs that were taken down that says it was an area you weren't supposed to be in. Those signs were taken down. There were gates that were moved early on before the crowds moved towards the Capitol. You have people that were literally telling people over bullhorns to go into the Capitol, cause trouble. These are some of the most famous of the bunch, and yet they have not been arrested for whatever reason. Does this documentary get into those anomalies on January 6th?
Yes, in fact, one of the big topics that we cover is what we call suspicious actors. Those are people who have not been arrested or charged, and primarily have not been even identified, other than being given either a number on the FBI's most wanted site or a hashtag assigned by Sedition Hunters' website. They put up some kind of whimsical descriptions of people. But we've identified more than 20 that were in the hallway where Ashley Babbitt was shot. And defense attorney Brad Guyer, part of his investigation, has identified 80 people, primarily on the east side of the Capitol where the Columbus doors are located, that he calls suspicious actors and material witnesses. These are people who have not been charged, have not been arrested, and most of them have not even been identified, which, considering the lengths that they went to with facial recognition and other investigative techniques to identify people, is quite shocking. And when you see the placement of some of these folks and the groupings of them, it certainly raises even more questions about just exactly what was going on with these folks and how did they get there.
Do you think they were federal officers undercover?
Well, we know from reporting done by Newsweek and by an independent journalist named Steve Baker, the pragmatic constitutionalist, you find him on Twitter, that there were military assets embedded, and there were some special ops troops embedded in the crowds that day, and according to Newsweek anyway, that they had shoot to kill authority. You know, under what circumstances, I don't know, but I think it's pretty clear there likely were, whether there were FBI assets, agents, you know, that we don't know for certain. That question was asked in a Senate hearing earlier this year, and the FBI's top people just said, we can't answer that. they were asked point blank, you know, did you have agents embedded? Did any of the agents commit crimes that day? And even to those questions, the response from the FBI folks was, I can't answer that.
And we know what that means, right? That's government speak for yes, because we can't tell you no. And it is just so truly disturbing, I think, for so many of us who want to believe that our government is doing the right thing by the American people. And this is another example of how there is something else perhaps going on behind the scenes. Joe Hanneman is with us. He is an investigative reporter for the Epoch Times. They have a brand new documentary that's out, The Real Story of January 6th. You can get it at theepictimes.com. And Joe, I want to ask you, you brought up Ashley Babbitt. There's a lot of confusion about what happened to her. She was going through the window. She ended up getting shot. What did you find out about her death?
Well, I can share something with your listeners that nobody's heard yet. And, in fact, my story on this will be going up on the Epoch Times later this morning.
We love a scoop.
Our use of force expert that appears in the film, Stan Kephart, after looking at all the video that we could lay our hands on, he concluded that Ashley Babbitt was murdered on January 6th. And what he described is shot and killed under the color of authority. And, you know, that is not a unique opinion. I mean, there are others who have expressed that opinion, including two former New York City police commissioners, Bernie Kerik and Ray Kelly. But, you know, this was based on his careful analysis. And he said there were not conditions present that would have justified using deadly force. And so he classifies it now as a murder.
Interesting stuff.
It is. It's fascinating. I'm looking forward to watching the entire documentary and appreciate the work the Epoch Times is doing out there. And we appreciate you coming on today.
You bet. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Absolutely, Joe. Thank you so much. Check out theepictimes.com. That's theepictimes.com. Joe Hanneman can be followed on Twitter at Epoch, E-P-O-C-H, Joe64 on Twitter as well. And definitely something to check out. It is up and premiering today, The Real Story of January 6th. As we continue, well, it seems an L.A. sheriff's deputy hospitalized because of something he came in contact with on just a regular traffic stop. The details after we check the roads and your headlines with Larry Marino, our newsman, as your Friday Morning Answer continues.